What's the Mood, where we talk all things mood and mindset, sleep, nutrition, chemical health, and leadership. I'm your host, Julie Berry, from the Illinois Human Performance Project, and we are so glad you're here.
Okay, Johan Speaks, welcome to What's the Mood. We're super excited to have you today.
Good to be with you.
So we had the privilege of meeting at a student leader conference in Lake County, Illinois, and I got the privilege to hear a little bit about you and how you came to invest your time and energy into the spaces that you do. But why don't you tell us a little bit about how that came to be for you?
Specifically me being at the conference or just like speaking?
You
as
becoming a speaker and inspiring students, student leaders, the audiences that you spend time with.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Humboldt Park, Chicago. And for those of us that don't know what Humboldt Park is like, it's not the best area in the world, at least when I was growing up. It has changed over the years. A lot of gang violence when I was growing up, you know, the drug scene was popping over there. I mean, any negative thing that you can think of, it was in my area. And then to top it off, you know, I had an uncle who was in a gang. He was a Latin King, also like drug dealer, drug abuser as well. So on one side, I had this like daily reminder of what not to be in life. And I'm giving you a little bit more than you heard, I think, that day that I spoke, because there's a couple of pieces, I think, that formed who I am and why I do what I do. Obviously, some of it is environmental. Some of it is like home life, just seeing so much negativity, as well as I had leaders in my life that had an opportunity to speak life into me. And what I experienced was they really didn't. You know, I think from their perspective. So one of the stories that I always share is when I was in eighth grade, my principal came into the room and she, you know, it looked like she maybe was going to give us like a motivational speech of sorts. But what she told us was, you know, all you guys are from this part of Chicago and, you know, some of you are going to be in jail before you turn 18. Some of you are going to join a gang before you turn 18. Some young ladies are going to get pregnant and drop out of high school. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, some of you young men will be shot and killed in this neighborhood. And I remember for me as an eighth grader, you know, I'm just kind of looking around at my friends and asking myself, when does the good part come of this speech? You know, when does she say, but that doesn't have to be you and your life can be different? And she never provided that angle. So again, from my standpoint, you know, if I give her the benefit of the doubt, she was trying to do one of those like scared straight things, you know, like, let me tell you about how bad the world is. And this is where you would be if you don't change anything. But for us, especially who we were as kids at that time, we didn't need somebody to tell us what we already knew. You know, we didn't need somebody to speak to us about the reality that we lived in on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I really believe that what we needed was somebody who could instill hope and paint a new picture of what was possible for us.
Yeah.
Instead of like, here's reality. So I walked away from that being like, man, that's not going to be the way that I'm going to live my life. And then when I got older, I realized my voice has power and I'm going to tell my story to help kids like me to kind of find their story, to figure out, you know, who they are, to establish their identity, solidify their values. And then as I started to tell my story, I realized, oh man, it's like, it has an impact.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it was just kind of like experimental. Let's see how this goes. And then I realized just me talking about the way that I grew up and sharing some of these pivotal moments for myself, it helped kids navigate some of their toughest moments too.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, like, and I was at the time when I first started speaking specifically, I was 22 years old. So I was still kind of a young blood myself. You know, I hadn't even graduated from college yet, but I just knew I wanted to give back.
Yeah. You know, as you're talking, I'm reminded of a few things. One, you gave an example to the student leaders in the room. It was like 150 kids, I think, about like we all encounter blindfolds in life, and how you prepare for those moments helps you and how you respond to them. And I was struck because I was running a breakout and I was like, you know, there's a lot of connection here in what you're saying. We help students think about their relationship with sleep and nutrition and the chemicals they put in their body and how they respond when the uncertainties in life, aka the blindfolds, come, because it makes a big difference in the things you choose to cope with and how you choose to respond, you know. So I hope I'm not giving anything away, but that was a very powerful analogy that you gave there.
Yeah, there's so many applications for it, you know, and I actually love using that illustration in the midst of different age groups. So I just spoke at a conference with professionals in the footwear world, a lot of designers, and
Cool.
I use the same illustration. So it's not like it's, you know, relegated to like, oh, this works for kids. It resonates with all of us as human beings because we all are familiar with that truth. One, feeling like life has blindfolded us at some point where we feel maybe lost or confused. We don't know how to get through it. And then we have to figure out what's the next step and even like, how do I get to the finish line?
You know, another thing that stood out to me is, you know, you are a man who was not afraid to show your vulnerability, show some emotion, you know, and in this society, I think it's rare for young men and women to see that in an adult. And
Yeah.
where did that strength of emotional maturity, the courage to show that, where did that come from? Have you always had it?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I don't know if I can pinpoint like here's where it started, but it feels like if I were to find the way that I developed it, one, when I first started speaking, I knew that I had been around a lot of people who were fake. And as a kid, you can kind of like when I was young, I could smell people who were faking things and who acted like they had to have it all together and, you know, who would maybe say one thing, do another, or hold in their emotions. And when I was young, I was like, it just doesn't feel right. I don't believe them. I don't trust them. So when I started speaking, I think the one of the things that I wanted to establish myself as was like a real person, just like an authentic, honest human being. And I think as a result, I tapped into my vulnerability, right? It's like I don't have that. I don't have to have it all together. You know, I'm a work in progress. My emotions are real. And I think it became a superpower for me because I could tap into those real places. And, you know, as you experience, like it just kind of speaks for itself. You don't have to convince anybody when you're coming from that really vulnerable place.
Yeah, that was evident. I remember a student came up to me telling me, you know, you also have a strength in challenging. You know, there isn't a fear to have asked them to, you know, push into their leadership as opposed to like sit in the chairs and the comfort. And a student came up to me and, you know, you would use this example about like if you feel it in you to go up and help, go do it. And she was like, I was going to do it, and I initially was like, I don't know if I can. I don't know if I'll get in trouble, you know. So to be given permission to trust that gut, that inner voice, and do something with it, I think was a powerful thing you bring to the next generation of leaders.
Yeah, because I think there's so much second guessing. You know, I think we live in a time where a lot of us speak to the fragility of where we're at as humans, right? Where a lot of us don't want to get it wrong and we're afraid about how we're going to look and who's going to talk about us and, you know, everything's a trigger warning or whatever it is. And I think we need to start to speak to the most potent parts of who we are and invite that part of us out. I think we've been, I want to like be careful with my words because I do think it's important to speak to the parts of us that are sensitive while believing that we're not fragile. You know, and I do think it's a fine line because I think sometimes we mistake sensitivity for fragility instead of understanding, hey, we can be sensitive and strong. Some of that is part of what we're talking about is like you can be vulnerable, you can own your emotions, and there's a really deep strength inside of you. Or you can make it through anything. You are capable of so much more. You have capacity. So keep stepping into the uncomfortable thing. But I think, you know, one of the disservices that we've done in our culture is make feelings the primary piece of the puzzle. And it's not that they're not important because they are, but I don't think that's the source of decision making.
You mentioned growing up, you had a decent amount of examples of leaders that didn't pour into you. I think I also remember you said, the message given to you had an impact on you, but not in a way that was motivating. There are a lot of adult impactors that, come in and out of our program, whether they're parents or teachers or school administrators. Like, what's like some advice or a thought you would bring to the type of influential power and impact they could have on a young adult in their mind?
I think that so to me, one of the biggest challenges that we have as leaders is instead of imposing our vision on kids, really start to hold space for their vision. I think because sometimes we're fearful as leaders, we try to fit kids into a certain like bucket of this is the way that you're supposed to be or you should do this. And it takes a lot more patience. I think it takes a lot more empathy, a lot more understanding to figure out what's inside of them and allow that to flourish. So I'm a parent right now, I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. I think that's the biggest invitation for me as a parent. It's like I'm invited to love my kids, create a sense of belonging, create a sense of worth in them so that they can go out and be who they are, not who I want them to be. And I think it is the easy road for many of us as leaders to just like create mini me's, instead of no. There's a uniqueness, there's an authenticity in all of us. And what does it look like to unlock that? That is the special nature of leadership.
So I'm hearing as an adult, like maybe have one of those like look in the mirror moments. Are you leading your vision or are you holding space for this young person to fuel and understand their vision? And then I also heard like that there could very easily, without even realizing it, be leading by fear.
I believe that that's one of the biggest problems too, just in human nature, is we allow fear to be the leader. And I so even there, I don't moralize fear, right? I think fear is a useful emotion. The catch is, again, it's not meant to lead us. So when we catch it and say, oh wow, like I'm making decisions because of fear, or I'm allowing my fear to dictate how I relate to this person or how I speak to this kid or whatever it is. I think that's the thing that needs to be caught so that we can shift it and move it into a more powerful place.
I don't know what your age is, but there was a brand called No Fear back in the day. I don't even know if it still exists. But in my mind this morning, I was like coming up with a new brand called Yes Fear, because like one of the affirmations I have is that I won't be guided by my fear. Like to deny that one is fearful is kind of silly, but to choose to not make decisions out of fear is courageous and strength, right?
That's exactly what it is, right? So I'm 46 to answer your question.
Ooh, you got me beat.
And yeah, I think, for a long time I couldn't stand fear and I like hated fear and I didn't want to, I think we have all this talk about be fearless, be fearless, be fearless. To me, I wanna embrace the fact that fear is in me. And again, just not I want that to be maybe a guide. It's not going to be in the driver's seat. It can be in the passenger seat, right? Because there's times where I need to hear, hey, be careful for X, Y, and Z. Okay, now I know, but there's other principles and values and even emotions that are going to be the drivers for me.
What you get to do sounds very fun and energizing. I'm curious, what's something you have hope for in this next generation of young leaders as you get to be in the environments that you're in?
There's so many things. I think we live in, we could probably have conversations about politics and relationships and economics, technology. Part of what I think bothers me is most older folks and adults are pointing out the issues. And I would love this next generation to be people of optimism, right? Where we're not, they're not complainers, they're not pointing out all the things that are wrong, but they're creating what's next. They're establishing what's possible. They're interested in innovation. And I really think as a result of this social media AI world that is kind of bubbling, I think relationships are going to be even more and more important. I think the language of the heart is going to be the prominent language in this next generation. And you can kind of see it already is I feel like they're leaning in that direction. They want more. It's not enough to know information anymore. I think we're going to be able to outsource that with AI Not going to be able to outsource the heart. And some of what, you've talked about too, right, is like the emotional component to life, understanding what you're feeling, why you're feeling it, to make space for it, but then to allow that to be a source of connection from human to human, and to be allow that to truly be a source of energy for collaboration and creation is really, really exciting to me. And I think they're going to forge a new path in that arena to be, if I could paint the picture, it would be like they would be the generation of the heart.
That's beautiful. And I have hope for that too. The thing I came and was asked to lead was what the students had requested, which was increased abilities for connection. Right. And I think one thing I love about the Human Performance Project and what has kept me really invested in this is I think in a lot of ways, when you help anyone consider their relationship with vital parts of your humanity, like sleep and food and coping and chemicals, it is inviting like a head heart connection, awakening awareness. And when you do that, you are more open to connect with others and see the world in a clearer, healthier way.
Absolutely. Yeah. And right, as part of the, I think the source of my coaching is the idea of integrity. Within that, it's to live an integrated life. I connect it's mind, body, heart, and spirit. A human is integrated when all those things are in alignment, working together. In order for that to happen, we have to be attuned to the needs of the mind, the body, the heart, and the spirit. And I think that's one of the biggest travesties of our time is we're extremely d disconnected from those things. We don't know what we need from moment to moment. Sometimes it's just plain and simple physiological. We're ignoring some physical needs that we have. Just like you said, we're not sleeping enough. We're not eating the right things. If we would provide those needs, our performance would change. The way that we show up would change. Now imagine if we provide the heart needs that we have, if we provide the mental needs that we have, if we provide the spirit needs that we have, the social needs that we have. Like, to me, human flourishing and human thriving would be more commonplace if we could pinpoint the need and meet it.
So we always end our podcasts with this question, and I'm excited to hear your answer. On the hard days, Johan, like when it's tough to find that connection with the mind, body, heart, spirit, when you're feeling the fears are higher, or the doubt. Like, where do you source your inspiration and motivation? Where does that come from for you?
Yeah, I think I've worked pretty hard on this. For me, part of inspiration is like the idea of breathing life into something. And there are moments where it feels like there's no life, right? There's just like I don't have the life source to go create. In those moments, what I remind myself of is like the resource is always inside of me. So sometimes I think for most of us, we want to like go outside to get it, meaning like externally. And there's principles and there's truths that live inside of me that really motivate me in the times where I don't want to maybe get up. And sometimes it's the truth of like I'm capable of doing this uncomfortable thing. I specialize in hard stuff. Then there's times of like I want to be a certain type of person for my kids. I want my kids to see a dad. Like today I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I ran to the ocean. Not because I necessarily felt like it, right? The feeling wasn't there and I had all kinds of reasons not to get up and do it. But it's this thing of like, I'm inspired to be the best version of myself. And that even happens on days where I don't feel like it. That happens on days where it's uncomfortable to do the thing. But that's the point, investing in an identity. And that's what I get to do in those moments, right? Is like part of what I'm investing in is I'm being an inspired person. I'm not waiting for inspiration. I'm choosing to be inspired. And that has become, I think, a special skill. To go inside and say, let me choose to be inspired before I feel inspired.
So are you saying it comes from within?
Yeah, because to me, agency is the key there. I'm choosing to be inspired before I feel inspired. Most of us are waiting to feel inspired.
We work with a sports psychologist. He's a great guy, Tyler Pazek. Shout out, Tyler. But he's trained kids with Doeziwood, and it literally just says, do the things you say you will do, and how that Like when you wake up and you don't feel like it, but if you do it because you said you want to do it, it is an agent to that whole mind body soul,
Right.
mind body heart spirit connection piece. So that's wonderful. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for asking it.
Yeah, well, it was really great to have you, Yohan. I hope we get to work with you in the future and appreciate you sharing just your experience and heart with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.